It's the Rebecca Gero Show for Thursday, March 24th, with special guest Michael Cole Schwartz from the Human Rights Campaign.
What a relief. I'm glad we got the economy back going. I'm glad we've secured our nuclear power plants. I'm so glad the Americans are back to work. We finally found out our problem. It's these guys. This is a problem. It's Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers. We're finally getting rid of them. They talk about master cylinders and slave cylinders. It's kinky.
What? We've been defunded? We haven't? No, not us.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, and of course, that was Anthony Weiner talking about Republicans wanting to defund NPR. I mean, how ridiculous is that? You know, you just got to wonder. Hi, everybody. How you doing? It is the Rebecca Gero Show. I am me, of course. And he is the ever-amazing Mike Scott.
The token gay guy on the show. And God, goddess, God of the buttons. Hello.
And, of course, we're going to be about a half hour. We'll be having Michael Cole Schwartz, who is the press secretary of the Human Rights Campaign. He'll be joining us to talk issues. Very excited about this. We're going to have a chance to talk with Michael, get some answers to some questions, hopefully have some good discussion. And, you know, if you want to participate, if you've got a question that you want to ask or it's a topic you want to bring up, you know, you can always get in touch. The phone lines will be open until just before it's time for Michael Cole. That's 928-277-4921. You can also get in touch with me on email. That's rgeroshow@gmail.com. You can also instant message me on AOL Instant Messenger, capital RLJ5862. And I'm on Skype at Becky Gero. But don't send me any phone calls because, I'm doing this now, so I'm not going to be taking any phone calls. But you can send me an instant message. Okay? You can also tweet me, Becky Gero. So all those different ways for you to get in touch. And boy, you know, I'll tell you, seems like for a time when there's not a lot going on politically, when we're kind of in that zone, that nether zone, whatever you want to call it, between the end of the last election and the beginning of the next one, there sure seems to be a lot of stuff going on, especially at the state level. Of course, as many of you know, there's a bill that is due. I don't know if it was voted on. I didn't see any news on it today. Due to be voted on literally any time now in Maryland, HB 235, which, of course, is a transgender rights bill, and I put the word rights in quotes because, I don't know if you can call it rights if you really can leave people a back door to discriminate, which is kind of what I think HB 235 does, because it supposedly protects you in employment, it supposedly protects you in housing, but it does not protect you in public accommodations, which is a huge, wide, gaping hole. What it is, of course, is Jim Crow. It's lunch counters. I mean, what it does is it allows the owner or a manager of a restaurant or a hotel could throw you out, or a bar, whatever, can throw you out on your ass for being transgender. That will still be legal under this so-called protection of this new Maryland thing, if it should become law. So needless to say, a lot of trans people are pretty upset about that. What we haven't heard is a lot of the gay community coming out in support and saying, you know what, which is what you would hope, which would be, we wouldn't accept this kind of a bill for ourselves. So we find it unacceptable for transgender people. But you don't hear that, do you? What we hear about is incrementalism, which, of course, is a crock of crap, okay? Are they going for civil unions? Are they claiming incrementalism and saying, well, we'll just go for civil unions and we'll have it amended to marriage later on down the road? Do you hear any gay and lesbian folks in Maryland, or for that matter anywhere else, saying that? Do you hear that in New York where there's currently a bill going? No, you don't. But we're supposed to accept that, right? It'll be good enough for us, good enough for the trannies, right? But, you know, if you're gay and lesbian, well, then you have to have full rights. But if you're transgender, well, you know, half a loaf, that's good enough for you. We'll get back to you some other day. You know, and that's really, I don't know, I mean, but if there's anything more of a definition of hypocrisy, could you ever imagine a more totally hypocritical position to take? Essentially, what these folks are saying, these Equality Maryland folks, are saying, it wouldn't be good enough for me, but it should be good enough for you. That's really what's going on here. And, you know, there's been a lot of controversy in addition about what the major organizations are doing here, you know, with the National Center for Transgender Equality. There was a picture published recently with Mara Kiesling with a button supporting HB 235. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force is supporting this. I've also heard that the Human Rights Campaign is supporting the bill. Now, of course, that we will check out with Michael Cole when he comes on the show. We'll ask him about that a little bit later if we have time. I have a lot of questions for Michael Cole, so I don't know if we're going to get to that one, but I will try and get to that. But there's a lot of, you know, that's what I think is the fundamental hypocrisy at play here. Is that, you know, there are many in the gay and lesbian community who are saying, you know, we really care about marriage. And, you know, you should be, you know, we wouldn't accept civil unions because that's not good enough. But you should accept a bill without public accommodations because for you, that's enough. That's all we're prepared to fight for because we don't really care whether you have rights. We only care if we have rights. And what we really care about is not looking like assholes. So we'll throw you this bone, and that should be good enough for you, and shut up and go back in your corner. Well, fortunately, a lot of the community is not shutting up and going back in their corner. And, you know, I think that's a good thing. I think really we should learn a little bit from the folks in Wisconsin, the folks in Ohio, here in New Jersey, several other states where they're having protests and saying to the government, no, you can't treat us like that. We are the working class and we will fight you. And I think that's what we have to do too, is I think those of us who are in the working class, LGBT Americans, the ones who are getting fucked over by the lack of employment protections in most of this country, 38 states for transgender people, 29 states for gays and lesbians. I mean, to me, this is just unconscionable. And organizations like NGLTF and the Human Rights Campaign should be leading this charge. And the problem is, I think, part of the problem is that they're not. They're so focused on marriage. It's marriage, marriage, marriage all the time because that's who they're pandering to. They're pandering to the wealthy folks, the folks making six and seven figures, the folks who don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, the folks who have nice apartments and have beautiful cars and homes and deck parties and appletinis and all that stuff. And they don't have to worry about these things, so they don't care about them. Well, that's someone else's problem, right? Well, you know, I think what has to happen is I think that what we have to do is, again, we have to take a lesson from the folks in Wisconsin and from the folks in New Jersey and the folks in Ohio. We have to be able to say, this is our fight too. We are the working class of this country. We are what makes this run. We are the money-generating people so that you rich folks can live high on the hog. And if you don't treat us right, we're going to come after you. And we're going to call you out, and we're going to say all those nasty things that you don't want us to say. And what's even worse is we're going to do it during an election year. I think that's what has to happen. You have to say, you know what, Barney Frank? Introducing the Employment Non-Discrimination Act a year late doesn't qualify as support. It's bullshit. I mean, have you heard this? I mean, in the Washington Blade recently, there was an article about Barney Frank said that they're going to introduce ENDA in the House. Why? What's the point? Where were you a year ago when it would have made a difference? You know, and Barney Frank hysterically is, you know, he's like, well, I don't know what good it's going to do. And isn't it funny? He's saying this now. What good is it going to do? Right? But in 2007, when he wanted to pass the non-inclusive bill, then it was, well, we have to get this passed. It'll make an inclusive version passing easier later on the road. Now, all of a sudden, Congressman Frank has done a 180 on this completely. Completely. Now, all of a sudden, it's why bother? You know, I think what's going on, I tell you what's going on, as far as I can presume, is that they know perfectly well that they're not going to be able to get away with passing a bill that's not transgender inclusive because their big money friends don't like it, because they don't like being protested. They don't like having galas in San Francisco. And I'm talking about the Human Rights Campaign here, and this is not to bash the Human Rights Campaign, but it's just a reality. Okay, that you try and pull that crap in a city like San Francisco, you're going to wind up with a counter protest to your event that's larger than the event that you're holding. You're going to go and hold one of these things in New York, and no politicians are going to show up because they don't want to associate themselves with your position, and they don't want to have to walk past protesting transgender people. And I think the HRC understands that. I think NGLTF understands that. I think the other major organizations understand it. I think the Obama administration understands it. And I think Congress understands it, which is why you will not see an Employment Non-Discrimination Act introduced without transgender inclusion. The problem is that for all of their promises and all of their imaging, if you will, Congress is still just as cowardly and still just as afraid of a real debate and a real fight about transgender issues as they ever were. And I think that's a big problem. I think what we're having here is my cat just came into the room and opened the door, so I'm going to go shut it while I'm talking to you.
I'll just talk to the nice folks while you're shooing the kitty out. I don't know this kitty's name. What is your cat's what is your annoying cat's name, Rebecca?
My annoying cat's name is Jasmine.
Oh,
and she's
Jasmine.
A very lovely cat, but she can be a real
Jasmine.
Pain in the ass when I'm trying to do something like this. And you know, this is her, you know, because a lot of times I'll sit here and I'll be working and she'll sit with me, you know, and she'll hang out and she sits on my lap and she likes to hang out, and that's cool. Well, she doesn't know, you know, the cat doesn't understand we're doing a show here, you know. All she knows is the door's closed. Well, the door's closed, but it doesn't close all the way, so she knows if she bumps up against it, she'll open the door, and that's what she did. She just
all Jasmine knows is that it's time for love.
No, she knows it's time for dinner.
Oh. No love, just food.
Well, she's a very lovable cat. Although she does tend to have a limited patience with being picked up. She's not a pick. She likes to cuddle when she decides it's time to cuddle. That's it, you know. She decides when she wants a cuddling. Oh, and I see that Ethan is in fact broadcasting the show live. So if you're having trouble over here, make sure you can also listen to us on Trans FM.
And that actually is probably the best place, because then you get to see the chat room and all of the stuff going on in there. And there is quite a bit going on. Ethan says that.
Oh, is there? I am not actually in there right now. I will try and jump in there during our first break.
Ethan says that the Ohio transgender rights law has been repealed.
Oh, yeah, bad yeah. Language. Actually, I thought, didn't I send you a story on that, Mike?
I think that's up. That's right. It's up for later on. So we'll get to that.
Let's see here. Well, hang on. Let me see if I can dig this out here, as long as you mentioned it, because we still got some time here. Let's see. I got Philadelphia. I got all these different. No, maybe not.
Did we lose it? Oh.
Yeah. Oh, you know what it was? Actually, Ethan is kind of half right, because what it was I believe, and I'm doing this off the top of my head because I did read the story.
All right.
What I believe it was there was an executive order by the previous governor that it prohibited discrimination against LGBT people in state employment. And the new governor reinstituted that executive order, except he eliminated transgender people from it. He eliminated gender identity.
Okay.
So that's what he did. So gay people should still be protected. Transgender people, you can go twist in the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is yet another example of why we need the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and why it is so shameful that those organizations that are supposed to be leading this fight are just bending over, you know, and saying, oh, well, you know, don't ask, don't tell, repeal that, and that'll be okay. Oh, yeah, just give us the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, and that'll be okay. Just let us file joint tax returns, and that'll be okay. Forget about the fact that the vast majority of the community, the vast majority of the voting block of this community, are middle class and lower class, working class folks who need those protections, who are being thrown out of our homes, fired from our jobs, refused to be hired in 38 states if you're transgender, 29 states if you're gay and lesbian, and these organizations are so self-involved and so focused on themselves that they can't see beyond the doorstep to understand that the real grassroots of this community, the real LGBT America, is about workplace rights, about the right to have a job, about the right to be able to feed yourself, to pay rent, to keep a roof over your head. All the things that the folks who make 6 and 7 figures never have to worry about. They've got good jobs. They live in nice homes. They drive nice cars. And they just don't give a shit. And that's the problem. And I'm not, you know, I want to say that I'm not broad brushing this. I'm not trying to tar everyone, because that you always get into trouble with that, because it's never everyone. Nothing is everyone. But there is a very strong contingent that feels exactly that way. Just go over and read John Aravosis and you'll see that. Just go listen to Michelangelo Signorelli for a while, you'll hear that. I mean, you know, there's a very strong contingent that really just doesn't give a shit. You know, they're in their own wealthy communities, and they're very insular, and, you know, they like their money, and they like spending their money, and they like other people who like their money and like spending their money. And they really don't, you know, people who work for a living and who have to, you know, do things like pay rent and you know, who have to live on what they make, those people aren't important to them. And so that's what we see. And that's why we don't see, you know, Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz and Lawrence O'Donnell or any of those people, because they don't care about us. So why not pander to the wealthy? Because, you know, they have more money to spend on their sponsors, right? So, you know, I mean, that's why you see Rachel Maddow edit transgender people out of the hate crimes bill. That's why you see, you know, show after show after segment after show after show after show about repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and not a single word from any one of these people, and this includes Keith Olbermann going back to when, about the people who actually have to work for a living, the people who actually watch their show, the bulk of their audiences, why they don't give a shit about us. You know, and again, I said this last week, and I'm going to say it again because it's the truth. You can say what you want. You can call yourself a liberal all day long. And that's fine, because that's about what you believe. That's about what's in your heart. That's about what you feel personally. Anyone who wants to has the right to call themselves a liberal. But if you want to call yourself a progressive, that you have to earn. That you get a title, is that title you get by doing, by helping, by raising up the little guy. You can't call yourself a real progressive unless you act progressively. And that's why Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz and Lawrence O'Donnell, they can call themselves liberal all day long, and I'm never going to call them out on that in a million years. But when they start calling themselves progressive, that's where I get off the boat, because they're just not. And I think they should be called out on this a lot more often than they really are. And it surprises me, you know? It surprises me that they're not called out on this as much as they are. And that's our failing. You know, Marty Abernathy and I had a great conversation last week. I don't know if you caught it. The podcast is up if you want to download it. We did have a few minor editing issues, but most of the interview is there. And you know, Marty made a point, and she was right, that we have to do a better job of presenting ourselves and our movement in a way that is separate and distinct from that of the lesbian and gay movement. Okay, but the reality is it's a double-edged sword. Yes, it's important that we do that, but if that's all we do, nobody's going to listen because we don't represent enough money and we don't represent enough votes. And, you know, we're seeing it in New York. I'll tell you. I when I was at the HRC gala back a few weeks ago, as I said in the article that I wrote for the Bellerico Project, most of the folks there are very nice, treated me well, had a good time, except for one individual. You can read about that in the article if you want to go dig that up, called Into the Lion's Den. But the thing is, you know, I don't know where I was going with this, but you know, the problem is that there's, I remember what I was going to say. When there was a guy who represented the governor's office, Andrew Cuomo, the New York governor's office, and he was saying, here's what we're going to do. And he announced that they were going to deal with the marriage bill. And they got a large round of applause when they said, oh, and we're going to pass GENDA, the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, GENDA. You could barely even hear anything. It was just people were, you know, how at a cocktail party kind of situation, there's always that kind of a murmur of people talking among themselves. That murmur didn't even shift at all when they said that. You know, it was like people, it wasn't that people were antagonistic. They just didn't care. And maybe that's part of the problem. It's not that people are saying, well, we want to screw the trannies. They just don't give a shit. And that's another question I'm going to get into with Michael Cole later. I mean, I'm not saying that as a statement. I'm presenting it as a theory. Because, I'll tell you, that's what it seems to me. It's not that folks are actively saying, we don't want this, or stuff like that, like you get on the right. It's that people are saying, this isn't important to me. I don't care about this. That's what I think, the issue may be. And again, I'm going to get Michael Cole's thoughts on this. I hope he'll have something to say on that. And one more time, got just a couple more minutes. So if you want to get in a question here, the time to do it is right now, 928-277-4921. You can shoot me a call. We'll put you on for we only got a couple more minutes. And I've got some good questions. And I think you're gonna, I hope we're gonna have a good interview. I think we will. I'm gonna ask some questions that I hope, you know, that we've had a long time to think about. This is an interview I've been writing in my head for a long time. And I'll tell you something else. I'm gonna ask him questions that, if I had a chance to speak to Joe Solomonis at that event, the questions I would ask Joe. You know, still not quite sure why Joe didn't want to talk to me. I mean, I have a pretty good idea, let's be honest. I'm not his biggest fan, and I think he knows it. I put that into print several times. So it could be that. And if it is, so be it. Okay. You know, and I'm appreciative that Michael agreed to come on the show and talk to us. So, you know, I'm going to sit here and say, you know, Solomonis is responsible for everything because, you know, he is an employee too. Let's not forget that. He serves at the pleasure of the HRC board and he carries out their agenda. So we can turn around and say, okay, well, Salmanis did this and Salmanis did that. But the reality is Joe Salmanis can't do a lot unless the HRC board okays it. He's not president of the Human Rights Campaign the same way Barack Obama is president of the United States. It doesn't work like that. Okay? He's got people he answers to, too. And so that's why, one of the reasons why I say that maybe the problem is the people. Maybe the problem is a lack of interest. Maybe the problem is that the membership of the Human Rights Campaign, or at least the those who are in power, simply don't give a shit. And you know, that's a question. I would have liked to have asked of Joe Salmanis a long time ago. This is not the, I would point out also, this is not the first time I've attempted to set up this kind of an interview. The first time I tried to do it, I was turned down. Now, bear in mind, this was a while back. This was back when Brad Luna was still with the Human Rights Campaign as their press guy. And I was very politely told, thanks, but no thanks. And this is also, in the credit where credit is due department, I would point out that historically, the Human Rights Campaign has... Ethan just sent me a message that says, HRC is beholden to their big donors. And I would agree with that. Absolutely. But they're also beholden to themselves. Otherwise, they wouldn't be on the board. There's a reason why Donna Rose quit the board, you know. So I agree. I agree totally with Ethan, is that these are folks that generally, you know, I remember in an article once used, now we're almost running out of time. We've got to get Michael on the phone very shortly. Mike is putting that too close to my window to see something.
Ready to go.
Okay, and we're gonna get Michael Cole on the phone, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes. So stick around.
She'll stand waiting to believe. Make him feel.
a great friend of the show. That's Jenny Slater. And it's called Shame on the Rebecca Giro Show. Well, Michael Cole Schwartz is coming up. He's from the HRC. And just give us a second.
Well, baby, let's get married. We've been alone too long. Let's be alone together. Let's see if we're that strong. Yeah, let's do something crazy, something absolutely wrong.
Becky Giro on Trans FM, and now here she is with guest Michael Cole Schwartz.
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Good, Becky. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Of course, we already introduced you. Of course, you are the press secretary for the Human Rights Campaign, and we're so glad that you could join us because you know, it's we've had a lot of friction over the years, and it's great to get some dialogue going. One of the things I really wanted to ask you about was, of course, you know, we all know the history, you know, things that happened years ago, which is not what we're going to get into tonight. We'll consider that something that everybody knows. But now that we've made some progress with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is legislatively done. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was where is HRC going to be focusing their efforts now? Obviously you guys are paying a lot of attention to the Defense of Marriage Act. Are we going to see more on employment rights, and what direction is HRC planning on heading now?
Sure. I think that's a good question. You know, following the legislative repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, coupled along with that was the change in control of the House of Representatives to Republicans. And Leader John Boehner and Eric Cantor, who have consistently never voted for a pro-equality piece of legislation. So that immediately impacts our ability to make the big sweeping changes at the federal level. So with that in mind, what HRC has done is sort of look out at the landscape and try and figure out what are the ways that we can make the most difference in LGBT people's lives given those circumstances. And there are a number of ways outside of big action in Congress that can be done. Three specifically I'd mention. The first is through administrative policy changes. So things that the Obama administration can do on their own without Congress, and we've seen some success in that so far in terms of the hospital visitation regulations or the way the State Department handles passport applications for transgender people, and there are a whole slew of them, and there's lots more that we can do in that area. The second area is looking at how we can make impacts in the states, and on the state level, where are the places where non-discrimination bills have a good chance of moving? Where can we work towards better relationship recognition in those places, et cetera? And then the third sort of basket of work is, of course, our educational programs, the Human Rights Campaign Foundation work, which includes things like our religion and faith program, of course, our corporate work to institute good policies and practices in corporate America, as well as our family project that works on issues like schools and bullying and adoption. So I think those, you know, in the big picture sense, are the ways that HRC is moving forward on the equality agenda, given where we are in the political landscape right now.
Okay. Now, one of the biggest problems, I think, historically, that many people in our community have had with the human rights campaign over the years is there seems to be a lack of communication outside of HRC's own circles. It seems that, like, there's been a lot of time when HRC's position has seemed to translate into, trust us, we know what we're doing. And, of course, it's great to have you on the show tonight to talk issues. But can you give us an idea of if HRC plans to work with and coordinate with the rest of the community's activist efforts more closely in the future?
Well, I think, you know, in looking at all of our work, coalitions within and outside of the LGBT community are critical to everything we do, be it in working to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and working with other LGBT organizations, as well as unions and the labor movement and corporations who support ENDA and things like that. And then when you look at the state level of, you know, our partnerships with statewide LGBT groups and other advocates who are on the ground and doing the work of, you know, changing legislatures or influencing legislators and changing hearts and minds. Those kinds of partnerships are critical. And you know, I appreciate you mentioning, you know, coming on the show. I think that it is important for people to know we are interested in talking about the work that we're doing and engaging people in that work, because, you know, it is all of the folks around the country who are you know, meeting with their elected officials, who are calling in and writing letters, and who are writing to their local newspapers and doing all of those things that put a human face on the issue, that really demonstrate the need for the kinds of change that we're advocating. You know, that's how we move the ball forward. And I think that we need to continue that pressure, and we need to be smart and strategic about the ways in which we use it.
Awesome. Okay. One of the questions, I had a question submitted by one of our listeners, and it concerns HRC's support of LGBTs who are also members of racial and ethnic minorities. It didn't seem to this particular listener that HRC has enough ethnically and racially diverse people in its leadership ranks. Personally, I noticed when I was at the HRC gala in New York, there was certainly a presence of racially and ethnically diverse people there, but the audience was chiefly white men. Do you agree with that assessment? And is there anything HRC is planning to address that issue in the future?
Well, you know, first I'd say that I think HRC's membership and supporters is wide ranging. You know, people from the folks who are on our steering committees in 30 cities around the country to people who, you know, are online activists with us, who, you know, respond to our email alerts and go on in-district lobby visits to our staff. I think that we do our best to represent the community which we serve. And, you know, one thing I'll talk about specifically is our diversity initiatives that are not just about diversity, but also inclusion, and making sure that we are being representative and bringing into the fold people from all sorts of backgrounds and sexual orientations and gender identities and racial makeup and all of those things. So we have a chief diversity officer, Ku Vu, who I hope that everyone in the community has the opportunity to meet sometime. I think she is doing tremendous work. And in our diversity department, we have a number of other staff members who are out there working on initiatives. For example, one of our big programs is a program with historically black colleges and universities to enable and empower students in those places to form gay straight alliances or an LGBT student group so that they can advocate for positive climates on their campus to deal with any kinds of incidents that turn up. So I think it's an issue that we are particularly keen to address and have made a lot of strides in that area.
Okay. Well, actually, that leads me to another question. This is a question that actually, if I had had a chance to speak to Joe Salmides at the gala in New York, this is the question I would have asked him. And the question is why does HRC need a diversity department, an organization that's dedicated to LGBT rights? And you would think that, I mean, isn't the entire organization supposed to be a diversity department?
Yeah, I think that is a fair point, and certainly diversity initiatives are influenced throughout. The wonderful thing about having a chief diversity officer and other people who work on that full time is to continue to, you know, work inside and outside of the organization so that all of the issues of diversity and inclusion are kept at the fore of the conversation. You know, I think it's not just that our diversity initiatives or the way we think about diversity lives in a siloed, set off piece, but rather that having people whose job it is to focus on those things makes us more responsive and more in touch with the things we need to do in order to accomplish that. You know, one thing, for example, is through partnerships. You know, we are working with the campaign called Ya Vas Hora, which is a citizenship initiative around the country. HRC volunteers have been plugged into these workshops that make it easier for people to go through the citizenship process, which can be very daunting to folks. So, you know, I think it is having those sorts of people who are focused on doing that work, who help bring in those partnerships, who help make sure that the focus continues to be how do we continue to be an inclusive organization.
Okay, well, that's a great answer. Because that was something that I actually found kind of curious. Now another question I wanted to ask. Now it's no secret to anybody that there's a serious rift that's developed over the last several years between HRC and the trans and the grassroots elements of our activist community. And what I would be interested in knowing is, does HRC believe that we can still find ways to work together, or is there by now so much bad blood between the various factions that it's no longer possible?
Well, Becky, I'll tell you, I sure hope so, because I think we need everyone marching, you know, toward the same direction. I think we all share the same goals, and I think that we're actually in so many ways on the same page, and I don't discount the points of view that people have and the way they come into this. But I do, in my heart, believe that we all want the same goal, and that is equality for all LGBT people. And I think that the only way that we are really going to get there is if we can work together to build coalitions, to enlist more and more people into the army that is fighting for our basic rights. And I think that's what it comes down to, that if we are divided and if we let things get in the way of that, then it takes us further away from our goal. So not only do I think it's possible and completely reasonable that we do work together well, but I think that it is absolutely critical to our success going forward.
I would tend to agree with that. But following up on that, what ways do you think, I mean, because again, we're starting, I guess, you know, just with the history being what it is, we're starting, you know, from, there's a pretty wide gulf there. How do we bridge that gulf? Where do we find the ways that we can work together effectively? Because, you know, one thing that I've always felt over the years is that, you know, HRC has probably, it's fair to say, HRC has more resources in terms of money and people and the ability to get the on-the-ground work done than most of the other organizations, if not all of them. And I think part of the frustration on the grassroots side is that people are saying, you know, take some of those resources and, you know, put them into employment rights and put them into the issues that really chiefly concern the lower and middle classes. And I think there's a frustration that maybe the HRC could be doing more in that area. Do you agree?
Well, I think that you know, you mentioned employment rights, and I'll talk specifically about ENDA. You know, continuing to build support for an inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act is such a critical priority of ours. You know, it has long been a priority of HRC and the community, and I think that there's more work to be done, and we can use all the help that we can get. I don't think it is necessarily a question of HRC resources as much as people being engaged, because we are only as good as the people who are engaged and active on the issue are. So I think that it's wonderful people are saying, you know, in this economic time that we're living in, where people are struggling for work, that ENDA is such a critical priority. You know, it is part of an economic empowerment agenda for the LGBT community that we need to focus on. So in the next couple of months, one of the every 2 years, HRC, as part of our religion and faith program, gathers what we call the clergy call, and there will be hundreds of ministers, straight and LGBT, from around the country who will be lobbying on Capitol Hill. And one of their highest priorities is advocating for movement on an inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And, you know, that is one example
about
of
that, though. And, you know, again, I said at the beginning and I've said throughout that I don't want to rehash the past, but I think this is recent enough that I think it's worth asking this question, because this is a question we've been discussing on this show up until now. It seems like, depending on who you ask, there's a dozen different answers on what went wrong with the Employment Non-Discrimination Act last session. There are those who say that the Democrats got cold feet and just decided not to do it. And then there are others who say that, for example, Dana Beyer, who was on our show recently, and used the term gay incorporated, which we all know what that generally refers to, and said that it was activists in Gay Incorporated who pressured the Democrats to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell first and leave ENDA until later. Do you have an opinion on this? And are there any lessons learned from the last session with ENDA that we can apply going forward?
Well, it has always been HRC's position that ENDA and repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell were not an either-or proposition. I think, you know, it is something that both pieces of legislation were priorities for HRC and the community, and never would it be that one was picked over the other. Certainly, we don't control the timing of bills on the Hill and what moves and what doesn't. And I think that we, as much as anyone, were disappointed that ENDA did not move in the last Congress. And I think one of the lessons learned from that is we need to, you know, not only have that sustained drumbeat of support for ENDA, but to ramp it up a couple more notches. And I think that, you know, looking to the future, that's what we need to continue to do, is make the case for why it is not only damaging to LGBT people to be at risk of losing their jobs, but how the lack of nationwide employment protections is really a stain on our country and our ability to get through the economic times that we're in. You know, it is just a travesty that people are not secure in their work. People who are unemployed or underemployed and trying to find jobs who might be LGBT have a significantly tougher time facing. And that is the message that we as a community need to continue to beat the drum about, and we need to be in front of our members of Congress to go on in-district lobby visits and say, hey, this is an absolute priority for me and my family and my community, And that is the kind of work that we need to continue to engage in.
I can completely agree with you there. Another thing I wanted to ask you about was one thing that I picked up on when I was at the HRC Gala in New York was that there didn't seem to be a lot of, well, to put it, you know, working class folks there. I mean, now obviously everybody was dressed very nicely. It was kind of hard to pick out, but it seemed like it was, you know, as you would probably expect at an event like this. A wealthier crowd. And when, in particular, when the representative for Governor Cuomo was on the stage and he was talking about initiatives that they were going to focus on, when they mentioned gay marriage, it got a huge round of applause. And when he mentioned gender, it seemed like nobody was really paying attention at all. There was no, the only person who I noticed who had a reaction was me. And what I'm curious about is, do you see this as indicative of a problem within HRC's membership ranks, that one of the reasons why perhaps historically you've been conservative on these things, on transgender rights and those kind of issues, is that there's actually not that much support for it among your membership and your leadership?
I think that the support among our membership and leadership is actually tremendous. I think people come to HRC because they want to be a part of an LGBT rights organization. I think your experience at the dinner is a one of many sort of venues for HRC. Granted, it is a higher ticket price event, but the vast majority of just looking at donations to HRC are small dollar. You know, most of the money that we raise to support our field work, to support our lobbying, to support the educational programs, that money comes from people who give $35 a year. You know, it is not a higher tier of giving that actually is the main fuel behind HRC. But I think that in terms of the commitment of HRC's membership to transgender issues and other sorts of employment and as you said, working class things that are things that working class folks are really concerned about, I think that is a huge part. You know, one of the biggest ways we get new members and supporters is through our Pride program. And I always, for me, it's one of my favorite moments of the year is to be out at a Pride. I've gone to so many of them around the country. And it's meeting the people who are just sort of living their lives, who wouldn't consider themselves activists, who, you know, want to sign a petition, they want to get involved, because it is so impactful on their own experience and their own lives. And to me, that is the real fuel of the human rights campaign, and the reason why, for me, you know, I go to work every day and try and make a difference on these things.
Awesome. Can I hit you? I know we're running late. We're just about out of time. Can I hit you with one more?
Please do.
Okay. One of the last question I wanted to hit you with is, obviously, we're about to head into an election season. A lot of candidates, a lot of elected officials on both sides of the aisle will be up for election, including our president. What can you tell us about HRC's effort to get out the vote and promote the LGBT agenda during the upcoming election season?
Well, thanks for asking. I think, you know, as we start getting into the presidential election, and of course a third of the Senate is up, and all 435 House members, this is going to be a critical time for us. You know, we talked about John Boehner and the Republican leadership in the House, and frankly, that is what is really standing in the way of major progress on the federal level. You know, if people are really interested in seeing ENDA pass, you know, been involved in some of those House races. So as we move into the election season, I think you're going to be hearing a lot more from us. Certainly it is early, but on the Republican side, you know, we'll in terms of the presidential, we'll see who they come up with. But certainly the people who have been mentioned so far, I would not term friends of the LGBT
yeah.
community. And to put it bluntly, or lightly.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
And And I think, you know, it is going to be something we need to be engaged on. And I hate to jump from one election cycle to another, you know, because I think that it becomes tiring. I think there is still important work that we can do, particularly right now when we're looking at the states and places that can move inclusive employment protection bills or other non-discrimination bills, places that can increase the relationship recognition for same-sex couples. There's still a lot of work, so I don't want to, you know, get too far ahead into election season, but to keep it in people's minds, I think as we go through this period now where we have some ups and downs and we win some fights and we lose some fights, when we lose those fights, it's always important to think ahead to, you know, in 2012, I need to hold this passion and this frustration I have with some of our losses and really direct that towards putting the right people in place who are going to be there for us, who are going to be able to make the change that we all want to see.
Gotcha. Michael, I want to thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. I thought it was a great conversation. I hope you'll come back and join us again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Becky. It was great talking to you.
Awesome. Thank you. Have a good night. And we'll be back right after a song.
Okay.
Or two.
12.
Set on me too. The devil's son gonna take me higher, higher than I ever been before. I told my mama, no, I can't take no more. I can't take no more. The wind has come, take me down to the empty farm. I grew up on the land, built this childhood and for a boy with my own two hands. I look around them bony trees and the sunken cows. There's almost snow. Nobody knows nothing except what me and the crow do know. Fuck with form. Who am I to weather a storm? But I go slow. I said goodbye to everyone I know. And in the morning I woke, and I was this guy named Joe. This guy named Joe.
We claim them as one of the nice things about Arizona. It's Coyote Grace and a guy named Joe from Rebecca and Mike. And we're here on Trans FM and Q1.FM. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in just a second here. But it's Michael.
I'm not gay.
He's not gay. And very dead, unfortunately, Michael Jackson here on the Rebecca Giro Show. Becky, it was my very odd experience to go to Michael Jackson's memorial service at Staples Center in Los Angeles. I guess, God, how long ago was it now? I guess a couple of years ago now, almost.
Wow.
Wigged out, I guess, is closer to how I feel about it. But boy, what a confused person. Too bad.
Yeah, well, you know, and hey, welcome back, everybody. It is the Rebecca Giro Show, 10 minutes after the hour, wherever it is you are on the planet.
Sure.
Give us a call. Let me know what you think of our interview with Michael Cole Schwartz. 928-277-4921. Give us a call. I'd love to know what you think. You know, we're hanging out. Let's see.
Hey, is this on? Come on, help us test. Call us.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to actually go back into the Trans FM chat room because, of course, when I crashed before, I managed to, you know. So, all right. Now I'm back in the chat room. And, of course, again, I want to let you know you can. There's so many ways you can get in touch with us. 928-277-4921. That's the phone. You can also email me at rgiroshow@gmail.com. You can also contact me on Twitter, Becky Giro. You can also contact me on AOL Instant Messenger, capital RLJ5862. So all those ways for you to get in touch with me. Oh, and I have to put up AOL, don't I? That would help. Yeah, okay, so now the AOL is up. And I look, I see Marty is on AOL. So, Marty, if you want to call in, you can do that. Anybody else who wants to call in. Let me know what you thought.
Hey, don't be shy.
Because I thought that was a really good interview. You know, on the one hand, he didn't give a lot of specifics. You know, it was very positive sounding. I agreed with a lot of what he had to say. Most, in fact, virtually all of what he had to say. Of course, you know, agreeing, you know, the proof is in the pudding, as with always in politics. And so, you know, I'll be looking to see, you know, what happens here. You know, because I would like to see the human rights campaign become more of a full partner in this. Ethan says, Becky, tell Mike to type your contact into the chat room, the Skype and the numbers. Good point. Actually, yeah, Mike, if you could do that
right now
while I'm here blah blah blahing away to the lovely people. You know, and that's the thing. It was very nice to hear. And again, I mean, I find it hard to disagree with virtually anything that he said. But again, the proof is in the pudding. It's not just about what you say; it's what you do. So, I'm hoping. I'm hoping to see. You know, because I'll tell you, a truly engaged HRC, an organization, HRC that is truly working just as hard for the working class and for the middle class and for the lower class and for people at that level as they are for, you know, the interests of those who are have more money, you know, I'll tell you, I think that they would be a very powerful ally. You know, the problem, of course, is you know, the people, you know, there's a trust issue there. And I think that it's, well, frankly, it's incumbent upon HRC to make the effort and say, yeah, we're for real. Let us prove it to you.
Hey, Becca, we've got a caller. And yeah. Hi, caller. You're on.
Hi, it's Ethan. How you doing?
Hey, good. Hey, how you doing?
Hello.
What's up, Ethan? What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, Becky, you did a great job at asking. You asked phenomenal questions, but he didn't answer any of them. He answered all of them the exact same way, and none of them, you're right, were specific. He said it would be great to have a coalition of people, which, by the way, there is a coalition. If you go to NGLTF's website, there's a coalition that's working on all of the things that he said need to be worked on, and HRC's not part of that.
Hmm. Well, maybe they need to be. Maybe they need to be.
Maybe they need to be, yeah. But they are part of the National Policy Roundtable, so it's not like they don't know that it exists. They're choosing not to participate. And, you know, as far as their donors are concerned, I know they set you up some about that, and they have large donor bases, and some of them are gay men that will donate millions of dollars, and I know a few of them, but most of their money that goes to their C3 organization comes from a few men that have in the past donated million-dollar checks, just wrote to the HRC, and then foundations, and they all, or each, I should say, dictate where HRC's work is concentrated. The membership base, which he said the $35 checks and blah, 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 or $50 checks that go, you know, come from their membership, that goes to their C4 organization. Most people don't know that. They have
okay.
a C3
can
and
you explain,
a C4.
Can you explain, for those who don't know, can you explain what the difference is?
Well, a C4, their C4 is a foundation. It's the Human Rights Campaign Foundation. And what that does is that they are registered lobbyists. So the money that comes from their donor, I mean, their membership, they go and they lobby, and there's a website, actually, that you can go to. It's a government website that you can see, actually, the things that HRC has lobbied for. They don't go into details, because when you register and you actually kind of check out with the Senate, and you tell them what you've done, and they it's posted on their website. They don't say who they met with or what specifically they discussed, whether it was really for or against. They'll say, for instance, that they might have when lobbied on ENDA, but you don't know what specifically they lobbied on. That's where that money goes. And it's not tax deductible. And the C3 cannot donate to the C4. It's not, you can't go back and forth. So their C3 is very separate from their C4.
Okay.
I agree
with you that there weren't a lot of specifics. One thing that he did say that kind of got specific, which I thought was interesting, was when I asked him if HRC was a part of trying to pressure the Democrats to take Don't Ask, Don't Tell before ENDA, and he said no. Which is about as specific as he got, which I thought was interesting.
Becky, let me finish. The C4 organization also endorses political candidates.
Mm. Okay.
Okay, the C3 is a fundraiser to keep them afloat. All of that money is tax deductible, and that steers the organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's what pays everybody, you know, that whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. You asked me to tell you the difference.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome.
Now, as far as ENDA is concerned, what exactly did he tell you about ENDA that we didn't already know? That we have a Republican House, not controlled House. So why aren't they educating? Why aren't they setting up a lobby day specifically to educate on transgender issues? If you said that there's a lot of work that needs to be done on transgender stuff.
In his defense, which, you know, I'm not looking to defend him, but in his defense, he did say that as far as stuff that's going on, for the next election, it's still pretty early to be doing that. And I happen to agree with that, you know, that it's, you
no,
know,
it's
that would, maybe that would be better done in the early part of 2012.
Anything. It's never too early to do that. That's bullshit. And the thing about working in the states, trying to get stuff passed, you know what? We're doing all of that. Transgender people are really hitting the ground running in states and doing a lot of this stuff on our own. There are organizations that are trying to go around us and doing this. And for instance, HRC is actually lobbying in Maryland on behalf of HB 235.
Yeah, I wasn't actually, you know, that was one of those questions that I unfortunately we didn't get to because, you know, unfortunately Michael had a half hour and that was kind of, you know, we just didn't get there.
I understand that. But I just wanted to clarify that because those are facts. You can find it right on their website. And the other thing that they're doing is what a lot of people don't know is that in the state of Maryland, at the same time that HB 235 was introduced, and they held a hearing on the day before, they introduced HB 285, which is to strengthen the public accommodation laws for gay, lesbian, and on all the people that are already included in the public accommodations law. And when they got, when there was a public speak out to discuss why it was not important to have public accommodations included in HB 235, Lisa Notte from the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force actually stood up and said, well, you know, it's not important that public accommodations aren't included in this bill right now because it has no teeth. There's no, the public accommodation laws suck. That's what she said, but never told them that there was a law ready to be introduced and a hearing on this bill that was strengthening public accommodations for everybody else that already had protections. Yeah,
that's really interesting because, you know, I mean, I know Lisa Motte, as I know you do, and she's one of those people who you know I haven't really have found reason to worry about over the years, and it surprises me. And I wonder
really
though, Ethan, are we sure that she knew about this when she made that statement?
Yep. Yes, she did.
Oh, okay.
Yes, she did. People sent her emails and actually asked her, and she said she knew about it. You can ask Jenna Fischetti from Maryland, who has been an activist, you know, right from the get-go on all of this stuff, and other folks, people had informed her in case she didn't know, and she said she did.
That's very interesting.
That.
Yeah, and so now my understanding is that this bill is due to be voted on pretty much any time.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, and do we have any idea of if this thing is expected to pass?
Nope, but what we do know, according to Metro Weekly, which was put out yesterday at about 1:30 p.m., they said that it was that this has been amended, quickly amended, but they're not putting out what the amendments are.
Well, that's interesting because I'm wondering, you know, of course, could that have been one of the amendments? Because I see, as a matter of fact,
they're going to make it worse. They're going to make it even, they're going to take more stuff away to get this to pass. That's exactly what they're doing. If they'd be bragging about it if they were adding public accommodations to it. They're not doing that, trust me. That's not what they're doing. They're weakening the bill to get it to pass easier.
Yeah, that's kind of scares me because, you know, then they wonder, you know, why, you know, you know, they get such a bad rap. And, you know, it was like what I was saying at the top of the show earlier. You know, would this be acceptable if this was concerning gays and lesbians? You know, would they be okay with saying, all right, forget about marriage. We'll settle for civil unions. I mean, would they be okay with that? Because I don't think so.
Of course they wouldn't. No, of course they wouldn't. And that's the, you know, this is one. And you know what? Nobody was consulted. There's a lawyer, and I interviewed her on Sunday, Allison Meiselman, who's been she's a transgender woman, who's been a lawyer in Maryland for the last 30 years, who's very highly credentialed. You can look at her her bio. I posted on our website. So I mean, I interviewed her and asked her why this was a bad idea, and she had testified against the bill. I listened to her testimony. That's all available on Maryland's .gov website. Everything's the recording is all there. Everybody that testified, And, you know, what else was interesting is when Lisa Moté got up to testify, she said that, you know, similar bills have passed in 13 states, but what she didn't say was all of them include public accommodations. California did go back to amend theirs, but during the same session. When they realized their mistake, they amended it during the same session. They didn't wait a year or 2 years or 10 years, and it wasn't up for debate. They just went back and fixed it.
Yeah, and you know, that's interesting to me, because here in New Jersey, when we passed a law in 2006, we have one of the toughest laws in terms of strong protections of anyone that I know of, and that was a big consideration here. And you know, we're lucky, because you know, it covers not only quote transsexuals but also any gender variance. We're very lucky here.
Yep. And it's in Connecticut's bill. They just had the hearing on that a couple of days ago. I believe it's 6599, HB 6599. They just had their hearing on that. And that is extremely inclusive. It just goes up and down and all around. And that's wonderful. And hopefully that's going to pass. And of course, Massachusetts' bill is fully inclusive. And this is the third hearing for this bill, the third session, the third time that this has come up, and it hasn't gone anywhere in Massachusetts. And this is a big fear for other folks around the country, of course, that has pending legislation, that people may look at this, at the Maryland bill, if it passes, and we pray that it does not, not just for the folks in Maryland, but for other states. And the Maryland folks understand why people from other states are getting involved. At their instruction, nobody's overstepping their boundaries. Everybody's being really respectful to the folks that are steering this, the transgender community in Maryland, and just asking, what can we do to help you? Because we do understand the impact of this. Public accommodations isn't just about restrooms. It's anywhere that that is public space, and that includes emergency rooms.
Right. It also includes bars, hotels, restaurants.
Restaurants. Anything. And I told a story a few weeks ago, Becky, where I was living as a lesbian at the time. I was, in my early 20s. I can't imagine if I was even 25 at the time, actually. And me and a friend of mine and two other women had gone to, and I say that because that's how I lived at the time.
Yeah,
a bed and breakfast in Vermont, of all places, that had not yet passed any non-discrimination laws. And we walked into the place. The other girls, they went to park the car. Me and my friend Jan were pretty visibly queer, butch, obviously. And we walked up and, looked around and said, oh, this is a really nice place. And we asked the woman, there was a guy and a girl sitting there, and a woman looked up and she said, can I help you? And I said, do you have any vacancies? And she said, hang on a second. She went behind the counter, she opened the book, she goes, oh, yes, we do. And the guy looked up, looked over his glasses, really interested. He jumped up, ran around the counter, shut the book and said, we have no vacancies. And she's going, but you're going, we have no vacancies. And it was very obvious that we were being discriminated against based on the way that we looked. We weren't holding hands. We weren't lovers. We weren't partners. It was about our gender expression.
Sure.
Nothing more. And this is how it's going to affect everybody. We didn't even have to be gay at that point. He just viewed us as being queer, regardless of if we were lesbians or if we, he just viewed us as being queer in some way and closed the door to us staying there. That was it. And Jan was so mad. I actually had to, like hold her from going back. She was, like, fighting that and going, what are you going to do? Well, he's going to call the cops on you, and then you're going to say what? He didn't say anything other than they have no vacancies.
Right, and not only that, but there's also, if there was no law at the time, you don't have a leg to stand on.
No, exactly. So, we didn't have a leg to stand. It was infuriating. It was embarrassing. It was all of those things. You know, that a young person feels, that has just been smacked and you can't do anything about it. And this is what's happening. This is exactly, and I'm sure that the gay married couple that went to stay at a bed and breakfast in Virginia just felt the same way. I'm sure they did. Because Virginia doesn't have public accommodation laws for same-sex couples.
Right, and you know,
and
I'll tell you something else.
The same way.
Right, and I'll tell you something else. Okay, just because there is a law in existence, it doesn't necessarily mean that the discrimination magically disappears. It has to be enforced. Okay, to give you an example of what I'm talking about, a few years ago, now this is, I think it was 2007, I'm pretty sure. And this is, I should point out, after we already had a transgender protective law on the books here in New Jersey, and I went to apply for a job at a local store. And the guy who interviewed me... basically laughed in my face. Said, get the fuck out of here. Who the hell are you? We don't hire people like you. Get the fuck out of my store. Okay. And
I went, God. And
the first thing, I talked to a couple of friends. And they said, oh, you absolutely have to, you know, you have to go and try and, you know, do something about this. I said, well, what am I going to do? Or get a lawyer? I can't afford one. I don't have a job. That's why I was there. Okay, number one, then I called the Division of Civil Rights and they were like, well, we don't understand this. So they delayed it and delayed it. And then eventually I got a letter from them saying, well, we're not going to pursue this, you know, because the problem was, and I can't really blame them all this much, was they say, you know, go prove it. You know, we called the guy. He said he doesn't know what you're talking about. We have no proof. It's your word against his. Too bad.
Well,
have a nice day.
That's where lawyers do come in. And the average person in your life, the average person, and this is why, when you look at the survey that was done, by the way, by NGLTF and NCTE, the people that are most affected by this never got to fill out that survey. They're not online. They never got to fill that out. We get a glimpse. I got to give them that. We get a glimpse. But that's still not the very first survey. The first one was done, oddly enough, you're going to love this, by Transsexual Menace in 1996. The very first survey of the trans community about violence and the discrimination that was faced in our community. I just found that today. And I was appalled because you know what? The numbers haven't changed.
No. They haven't. Between
1996 and this year, the survey was actually conducted in 2009. It came out in 2010, and they reintroduced it again this year as brand new. But the people again, you get some person that's out on the street. The other thing is homeless shelters. That's not covered either. Public accommodations, homeless shelters is a public accommodation. That's something else that's not working for trans people right now. I mean, and one of the people that's actually supporting HB 235, you know what they said? Well, you know, if we get this law passed and it supports employment rights, then we're not going to have any more homeless trans people. I'm like, are you kidding? How many people do you think will understand, first of all, that there's a law out there? Because this survey didn't reach any of them. To go and ask somebody that's walking the streets or working the streets that even knows that there's a transgender movement happening right now to try and help them. How many people do you think know that?
No, because the people who are the worst off are the people who also, they can't afford computers and internet service and things like that that would connect them.
They can afford electricity to clean sheets on a bed in a ratty fucking hotel. Ooh, excuse me, a ratty freaking hotel.
It's okay. Right, we're not afraid of the F word on this show, please.
Well, some people do, some people don't. I welcome it myself, but I just didn't know it with you... Actually,
hey, we're on Trans FM. We're just as vulgar as you are.
No, but this is so. If you take what the survey actually showed and multiply that, because you know there are so many. I'll bet you anything that there's not going to be one person on that actually answered that survey that will that will show up, and I hope this isn't that this never happens, or that I would love to see nobody ever again end up on the Transgender Day of Remembrance website. But most of the people that do show up there, they've never filled out a survey. They don't know they exist. They're fighting for their lives, as we should be.
I agree. And, you know, as I was saying earlier,
any of us could end up there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, the old saying is, you know, you're two paychecks away from homelessness. And I think that's true for a lot of us. But, you know, one of the things Marty and I were getting into on the show last week was that we need more of a movement of that's ours. You know, it's not the gay and lesbian and.
But we do. I think we're moving towards that model more and more. And it's working. People are starting to see more movements. People are starting to get more angry, and anger does fuel people into action. And hopefully, it's sustainable. I don't want people to stay angry. I want people to act on their anger now, and in the form of positive activism. I don't mean violence at all, but in form of positive activism. If you're mad, you're going to go to bed, you're going to grind your teeth, you're going to get TMJ, you're going to get migraine headaches. You know what? Instead, get off your ass and start doing something about it. And there are many ways to do it if you're afraid for your life. And not everybody can be out. We get to advocate for those who cannot, but you also can do that if you're not out. You can write letters. You can even lobby Congress. You don't have to go. If you're a cross-dresser, and you know, I know a lot of cross-dressers are really even afraid to be associated with the transgender community. You can say you're a relative of a transgender person, and go and lobby dressed in drab, or in female mode, or if you're a guy who's whatever it is, guy or girl, you can be whatever you want to be and go and lobby Congress, whatever makes you feel more comfortable, but obviously dress appropriately. But the thing is, it's just you can do that and be removed. You don't have to be like associated, you know, guilt by association. Oh, this person must be trans. That's not necessarily true. You can be a family member. You can be a partner, specifically
with cross-dressers, Ethan, one thing, and I say this as somebody who is a former writer for a cross-dresser magazine and website, mm-hmm. Is I used to write, and this was early on in my career as a blogger and writer, I used to write for a cross-dresser magazine, and I used to get emails and letters all the time from cross-dressers who are like, would rake me over the coals because I criticized George Bush, and they were as right-wing as they come. You know, and it seems a lot of the cross-dresser community is pretty right-wing and not supportive of our issues.
There was a cross-dressing person in New Hampshire only a few years ago who was a Republican judge who got pulled over. This was in the newspaper at Manchester. I forgot the name of their newspaper now. I used to live there. But it was in the Manchester newspaper. He was coming home from a gay bar. His wife was out of town. He got the opportunity to dress and go out, had a few too many drinks, and was trying to drive home. Police pulled him over, and they outed him. And that's one of the things that we're trying to also advocate against, because it's dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. Now, I understand that, you know, police reports are police reports, but when you're talking about somebody's livelihood, you're talking about somebody's, life, the potential of being, you know, should he have been forthright with his wife? Yes, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, but that's not up to, as a Manchester Union leader, it's not up to them to decide whether or not, you know, to out him on purpose. You know, you can say Judge so-and-so was pulled over for DWI. That's embarrassing enough. But you don't have to say that he was dressed in pantyhose and a dress, and you don't have to do that. Cross-dressing, that had nothing to do with what he did.
I agree with you, but isn't it also more that, as opposed to being a cross-dresser, isn't it more that he's a public figure as a judge who happens to be a cross-dresser? And, you know, I on the one hand, I agree with you wholeheartedly on everything you said, and on the other hand, there's also an attitude of, well, you know, if you're going to be a judge, if you're going to be a public figure, that's a risk you just have to take. If you don't want to take that risk, then don't be a public figure.
You know what? I mean, no, not necessarily. I think that as long as that person was actually, maybe working towards doing the right thing for transgender people, then great. Wonderful. I don't know what his politics actually were. Just because he's a Republican doesn't mean he was anti-trans either. But the issue is simply that, you know, and I understand what you're saying, but the idea of, being outed, can be very dangerous. It can be dangerous. And, you know, not just that might have ruined his marriage. Granted, again, that was his deal. He, be forthright with your partner or whatever it is that you're doing like that. But that's still his business. As far as him being pulled over for drinking and driving, that's the only issue that they had there. That's the issue. You know,
really?
that it's not a criminal offense to cross dress.
And of course, let's not forget, we also remember the very well known story of Peter Euler for Winn-Dixie.
I know. The truck driver. I'm pretty sure him and his wife are both passed on.
Right, but we should tell people, for those who aren't familiar, Peter Euler was a truck driver for Winn-Dixie down in, I think it was Georgia, and he was outed as a cross-dresser. I think he outed himself, actually, and he lost his job behind that.
He was in Florida, Florida.
Okay.
And he got fired for cross-dressing off the job, and he tried to, sue Winn-Dixie for wrongful termination, and he lost.
Well, because there was no law, as there still is no law in Florida, or Georgia, for as far as I know.
Right. Well, they're working on a bunch of different things, so hopefully there'll be something. I think one of the cities in Florida just passed something not that long ago. And forgive me for not knowing this, and I should. I'm usually good at that, but I don't. But I don't know right now. But getting back to being a Republican and being a transgender person across, you know what? I don't care. I still believe that everybody deserves equal rights, and, you know, someday they'll see the light that maybe, you know, that road isn't the best one to travel as a transgender person. And it's sometimes until they're outed or, you know, that the light doesn't shine on them. And you know what? I don't even care. I don't. I will fight for everybody's rights, even if they're Republican even if they're a teabagger. I do care, but I just want everybody to be safe and to be able to be gainfully employed and have the same rights as everybody else. It's hard sometimes knowing the things that I know, like you, about people that advocate because of their own guilt and shame against our community. I still don't want them dead, and I still don't want them unemployed. And maybe, being able to sit down and talk to them is something else. But
right, you just mentioned that, and talking about Republicans who may or may not be supportive, there's actually a clip that I had Mike pull earlier tonight. This is a guy, I want to run this and get your thoughts on it. This is a guy, his name is Fred Karger. He's a Republican. He's the first declared candidate for president, and he's openly gay, and he's openly supportive of LGBT rights. Mike, do you have that?
I don't think I have the clip.
My God.
I'll try and find it here while you...
Okay, well, I know we have the article here.
There's stuff to talk about, too, because if you want to get back to HB 235 and what you didn't get to ask HRC, I don't know if you heard the clip that I I actually got to call up Megan Stabler and ask her if she supported or opposed HB 235, which, of course, is the Maryland Transgender Civil Rights Bill, without public accommodations, and she said no. She does not support it. She gives me a six-minute statement on her not supporting that bill, and I applaud that.
That's nice to
that
hear.
That took her a lot of courage.
Considering that she was considering, let's not forget that this woman was defending HRC and its non-support for non-inclusive mm-hmm. for an inclusive ENDA just a few years ago.
I know.
Was making excuses for
her. It took a lot of courage for her to do that. And considering that Dana Baer just got kicked off the Board of Governors for a far less infraction of saying that she...
I heard that happened the day after she was on the show.
But it had to do with her interview in Metro Weekly.
That was what the show was about. Was basically the interview was.
Here's Karger.
This is Fred Karger. I'm in Washington, D.C. on what is a very historic day for me. This morning, I walked into the Federal Election Commission and I filed my papers to become the first serious Republican candidate for president in 2012. And also along with that, I became the first openly gay candidate of a major political party to ever.
All right. Whoa. So it's buffering, but you've heard it. It's actually live off YouTube, and we can, here's some more.
That's what I dedicate today to. I dedicate it to a lot of our youth who've taken their own lives. We had six who killed themselves last fall.
And
thousands more who thought about it. Well, I want to give people hope out there, particularly our younger people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or queer. You can do anything you want to do in this country. You can even be president.
But, Fred, you're a Republican, and you're not giving me any hope.
So I wanted to play that, Ethan, because I wanted to get your take. Do you think that a guy like that, I mean, obviously he's got no chance. But just the fact that he's out there, I mean, is that a good sign, or is that just, is this guy just an aberration that's going to go away?
Richard Tizay actually was a co-sponsor of the Transgender Civil Rights Bill here in Massachusetts. And he's going to be, I think he's going to be running against a Democrat for representative. And I can't tell you which one, but I like Richard Tizay. This is the first Republican I've ever really liked.
And what is he running for exactly?
What's that?
What is Richard Tizay running for?
He's running for a representative. He was the Senate minority leader in the state, but now he's federally, he's running for representative. And all he's going to be, and I can't tell you who he's running against or who he may run against. This is kind of a little, you know, but I believe that he's going to. And honestly, the guy that he's running against, that's a Democrat I don't like. This is going to be a hard decision for me to make, seriously, because I like Richard Tizay a lot. He's very much, he supports transgender people where the Democrat that's in the seat right now does not.
That's interesting. And that brings up another question, is should we as a community, as voters, should we be voting party and, you know, all the other issues that revolve around Democrat or Republican? Or should we say, if you don't support us, we don't support you, end of story? Where should we be on that?
I think we also have to look at the other issues that they support to see if they're truthful. And the other thing, of course, when it comes to endorsing candidates, is to have them fill out a questionnaire based on, you know, that's heavy on transgender stuff. But also the other things that are going to be important to our whole community. Now, you know, granted, this guy is going to vote on Republican lines for some things that we might not agree with. But hell, hasn't the Democrats already done that?
Yeah. Exactly my point. Is you know, really, can we trust who can we trust?
Transgender delegates. You remember this back in 2005, when the delegates, the trans delegates, actually withdrew withdrew for for transgender rights plank for the Democratic Party platform. Remember that?
Oh yes, I wrote about that.
Party. I know that you did. Withdrew for the sake of the Dem. So what did we get in return for that?
Nothing so far. I mean, really, we got a mention of Enda in the last platform, I believe. That's about it.
Okay, but did we do that as a did we get that as a result of this? Was this a payback for it? And for the mention of Enda, what has it gotten us so far? Except for, you know, during the lame duck session. Oh, that's right. We ran out of time. Sorry.
Yeah.
We ran out of time.
Well, we've discussed this in the past, Ethan, and you and I, and we've discussed this privately, that we both think that, you know, Diego Sanchez is, you know, that statement by him was highly questionable at best. And I'm being extremely charitable here. The word that Marty and I used last week on the show was bullshit.
And here's the bizarre, of course it was, but here you had him actually say to me, well, it was a mistake that I made that statement on a panel, and it was based on an article that he had read in The Advocate where Barney and Tammy Baldwin discuss Enda. And you and I both looked this up extensively, and I know that I did. I took half a day, actually, to do this because I wanted to give my friend the benefit of the doubt, and I didn't find anything any later than, I think it was April of 2010. So I called him back, and I said, please send me the article, and he failed to do that, and I've called him several times since then, and he still failed to do that. You know, my thoughts on that is, you know what, if my boss was in the room next door, I would just go, hey, Barney, did you say this? I'm reading this article here. And instead, I got, you know, well, so either he's really incompetent at his job or he's lying.
I don't believe he's incompetent at his job. I really don't.
Right. I believe he's lying.
I believe that he is saying something political. And maybe he's doing it on the orders of his boss, because let's be honest, he works for Barney Frank.
His boss reprimanded him for that in an article.
Yeah, I saw that where I think it was in the Washington Blade where he said, I don't know if Diego's assessment equals mine, or something along those lines.
Yeah, it was mild, but he tried to get that statement kind of pulled back, like okay, well, you know, I'm not going to post it anymore on my Facebook page, where, you know, I do periodically because I think it's important that people read it, because not everybody is going to go visit my Facebook page every day. You know, I know that. You know, especially in the days where people, even at best, I mean, or at the least, you might have a couple of hundred friends. At worst, you've got 5,000 friends. You're not going to come check my page. You know, I don't have any, you know. So,
I have you on my, you know, on my feed, so I see everything that you post. And I bet a lot of people do too. But you know, at the same time, one of the things I would love to, and I've already asked him, and hopefully he will agree to come on the show at some point. I want to ask him about that, because, you know, you would think that Diego Sanchez is somebody who, I mean, if anybody in our community is going to be in the know on what's going on in Congress, that he would be the guy. And if you can't rely on what he's telling us, then, you know, who can we rely on? You know?
Well, you know what? It's not about relying. It's about trusting, and I don't trust him at all anymore. And that's,
well, that's
sorry,
my,
but
you know, my, I meant relying on his information.
Several times being lied to. You know what? I would understand if you said, I can't talk about that. I would respect him for that night and day. Oh, I can't talk about that. That's something that I'm trying to work on, or, you know, whatever. But to make a statement like he did, and make it so profoundly, and then even go as far as to correct himself to make it exact and explicit, really bothered me.
You know what bothered me about that, Ethan, was he said the part was not about running out of time part. It was the we had the votes part. Because if we did, well, that makes a difference as to how we advocate next time.
Right. the votes to pass it, and the support to overcome a motion to recommit.
Yeah, and if that, if we can't count on that,
to say that we had the commitment and the support, actually, is what he said, to overcome a motion to recommit. That it wasn't just that we had the votes. All of it was there. I think it was a language issue, because, again, it was about defining transition. And if you listen to the interview I did with him on EMDA, he talks about transitioning people. This is what this end is going to be about, transitioning transsexuals. They're trying to figure out how they can go around the language, which doesn't explicitly talk about surgery or recommending or even finishing your transition with surgery. But I'm interested to know how they're going to decide when you're done transitioning.
Yeah. Because that's really an issue. Because let's not forget that what that does is it turns it into a class issue. Because then it becomes about can you afford to get surgery and therefore be entitled to your rights? You know, which means poor
exactly.
people need not apply. And that to me makes it a thousand times
issue.
Worse.
Because if I leave my job and say I'm a state, and I'm just going to use this for an example, say, you know, I'm an MTF. And I'm in transition, okay? And I'm an older person that's transitioning. I'm not, but I'm just going to, well, I'm an older person. But let me just, okay, and that, say I'm a really large person, and I probably, even with surgery, I probably won't pass. Let's just put it that way. It shouldn't be about passing privilege, but it's going to be. Because if you take a younger person who started their transition a lot earlier, They might even enter a job with a name change and their driver's license change as not being a transitioning transsexual, but somebody who has already transitioned. So they might be hired as a transitioned transsexual. So where is that going to? And then when does it end? Now, what if you are a larger person who's an older person who has had surgery, but you still don't pass? And I hate to use that word, but you're talking about corporate now. And you now, are they still going to be able to tell you that you can't use the ladies' room, or you can't use the men's room? Or what if you medically cannot take hormones or trans,
right.
and you're still a transsexual?
Right.
You know, this is going to be a big. This is a big, big. They didn't know what to do with that. It wasn't about they ran out of time. It had nothing to do with that. And you know what? The idea that they had the votes, you're right. They had the votes, Becky. And guess what? If they had passed that in the House this time, that would have meant that a fully inclusive bill passed the House of Representatives. And what would they do with that?
Well,
you know?
Now here's the other question that I have, because this we just heard the other day is that, and we're almost out of time, so we got to wrap this up. But I heard just the other day that they're planning to introduce ENDA in the House, and I'm wondering two things. Yep. One, I'm wondering what ENDA, you know, like you were saying, what provisions are we talking about? And two is, does it do any good?
Public accommodations. It's not going to include public accommodations. And this is the excuse. Mara Kiesling actually had the nerve to say that she helped stop this vote because it wasn't fully inclusive. She's noted as saying that in one of the interviews that was done with her just recently. And then, but she supports HB 235 in Maryland. That doesn't include
that
public
picture.
Accommodations. Yeah, she had it both ways. I looked at Adam Sandine wearing that button,
well.
Too, by the way. Adam Sandine wearing that same button. That's very nice, isn't it? That spokespeople for our community get to decide things like that don't even freaking live there. How wonderful.
Well, you know, on the one hand, I think you're talking about two different situations. Autumn Sandeen is a blogger, but she's also a private person. Mara is the executive director of a major transgender civil rights organization, and to me, that makes a difference because she's not just representing her own views and herself; she's representing an organization, and that to me makes a difference. I in my opinion.
No, you're right. That you have an executive director, but also, you know what, somebody who's afforded all these rights, you know what, I guess, I still don't think that they should judge other states or even say that they support something that isn't affecting them, ever.
Yeah.
At all.
Hey. Ethan, we got to wrap it up because we're out of time. But thanks for coming on. This has been a great conversation. And you know what? We're going to have you on the show one of these nights officially to get into some stuff because, you know what? We haven't had you on officially since we've been on. So I want to definitely do that because you've got so much good stuff.
And I'm sorry that I monopolized this time. I really apologize. I didn't even realize. I talk to you all the time.
Well, we love having you on. I just, you know, it's been, there's so many good people that we've had on recently that, you know, it's always like, oh, well, you know what, Ethan's always there, so we'll grab him whenever it's convenient.
And it's all right.
We can always count on you.
You can think of that. That's fine. That's fine to do that. I understand that. So.
All right, honey. I'll talk to you later. We got to wrap this sucker up because we're out of time. And I want to say thank you to everybody for tuning in tonight. I want to say thank you for supporting this media. I want to say, don't forget, if you missed anything, we will be replaying the show in about 5 minutes after some lovely music from Mr. Mike. And we will see you next week. And I'll let you know who the guest is. Look at my Facebook. And we'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.
Praise Jesus.
Show the people!